Blog Talk Radio.
All opinions, comments, and representations made by the hosts of Brilliant Ideas Radio and their guests are strictly for entertainment purposes. Well, at least that's what we think we're doing. Entertaining you. Welcome to Brilliant Ideas Radio. Brilliant Ideas Radio keeps you informed about all the awesome products and people in the food industry. Brilliant Ideas Radio is about food, music, and most importantly, having fun with your friends. And now, here's the man with the master plan, Brilliant Ideas, and his humble co-host, Crispy. So join the fun and call the studio number at 714-242-5272. Once again, the studio number is 714-242-5272.
Hey, good morning out there in Blog Talk Radio land. This is the Brilliant Ideas Radio Show. This is your humble host, Brilliant Ideas, and we are back in the saddle again. This morning, I am missing my compadre, Crispy. He hasn't shown up to the show again, so he either slept in or had a big date. Maybe he'll join us in a little while. We'd like to welcome everyone to the show. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. We do this every Saturday morning at the same time, same place, same channel. And we talk to people in the foodie industry. We talk to singers, kind of like American Idol, miniature style. We have singers on that come on Saturdays and on Friday nights. And we do this and try to keep you entertained. At least that's what we try to do. And we are moving along here. We've been going on since September. And each week, our audience gets bigger and bigger, so we appreciate all the support that we've had out there for our show, and we appreciate all the guests, too, who have come on our show up until now. It's been entertaining and fun, and we need more people to come on, so if you are interested in being on the Green Ideas Radio Show, we would like you to contact us. You can contact us through Facebook or through email, which is greatideas@earthlink.net. We're always looking for people in the food industry, restaurant business, or heck, we don't really care what you do. Like we say, if you can boil a hot dog, you can be on our show. And we'd also like to thank our sponsors. We've had a sponsor with us now for nearly 3 months. It's called High Roller Spirits. And if you have not tried out their products yet, we would recommend that you, if you like vodka, go to highrollerspirits.com, check out their sweet potato vodka. It's one of the best ones out there. It's won lots of awards, and I'll get to play their ad here, so hang tight.
High Roller Vodka is the world's first and only premium vodka made from sweet potatoes. In 2011, High Roller Vodka won the Double Gold San Francisco World Spirits Competition. High Roller Vodka is made with carefully selected California-grown sweet potatoes distilled by hand in a process which creates a sophisticated, unique, elegant, smooth vodka. Life's a gamble. Your vodka shouldn't be. For more information, check out www.highrollerspirits.com.
Yes, definitely check out highrollerspirits.com. It's a great vodka if you're into vodka. We appreciate their support up through the last 3 months. We are bringing on two new sponsors. We'll be starting next week with Don Pablo Cigars. They're in Las Vegas. They have hand-rolled cigars that are fantastic. And also Albuquerque Seasonings. If you haven't tried out Albuquerque Seasonings, you're missing out. They have great rubs. I use them all the time. And We'll be giving more information about our new sponsors starting next week, and when we come out with their little fancy ads, we appreciate everybody's support. And also, if you'd like to be a sponsor, you know where to call. Also, I just want to mention that we will be having our contest today for a free coffee mug. It'll happen sometime after our first guest, and all you have to do is listen closely, and then I'll be asking a trivia question about the first guest, and the first caller who calls in when I ask the question will get a free coffee mug with the Grillion Ideas logo and the ugly mugs of both Crispy and I on the mug. So all it takes is no purchase necessary, just lend an ear and check out what we have to say with the first guest, and then we'll be asking the question just a little bit after we dismiss the guest. So hang tight for your chance to win a free coffee mug. And speaking of our new guests, our first guest this morning is, well, basically he's in the olive oil business, and I'm not even going to try to say Jonathan's name. I want to make sure Jonathan's online here with us. Good morning, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm not even going to attempt it because I know I will screw up the name of the company and your name, so I'll let you have the honors. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well, you wouldn't be the first. The family name is Shabika.
Shabika.
But Shabika. Unlike how the typical American might spell that in Italy, they use S-C-I to make the sh sound. So S-C-I-A-B-I-C-A, Shabika.
Shabika. Okay, I got it. Because I was trying to phonetically figure it out, and I said, I'm going to destroy it. I'm awful with names. Shabika. Shabika. I got it. Well,
no
welcome
problem
to the
at
show.
All.
I see that you're basically in the olive oil business, and matter of fact,
correct,
you guys have a website, which is www.sunshineinabottle.com, and I was checking that out yesterday and finding out a little bit more about your products, and you've been in business for quite a while. Looks like seven decades.
76.
Here?
That's right.
Wow.
76 years.
76 years. Wow. So how did your family get into the olive oil business?
Well, it all started with my great-grandfather, who learned the art of olive oil production in Marsala, Sicily, as a young man, kind of at the beginning of the last century. And when he immigrated, he landed in Waterbury, Connecticut, and was never quite happy there because, he kind of hungered for that Mediterranean climate. Long story short, he ended up in Modesto, California, and thought it was more like his home in Sicily. 1925, he bought a property in Modesto, and then 11 years later decided he wanted to make olive oil here in California, and since we started in 1936, that makes us by far the oldest California olive oil company.
Okay. And so explain to me, I'm a guy who really honestly, I don't really like olives, but I love olive oil. And explain to me and the people who are out there.
You're not
exactly
alone. I'm actually just acquiring a taste for olives.
Really?
It's definitely two different worlds. If you don't like olives, it doesn't mean you won't like olive oil. And that's, predominantly because when you taste an olive, what you're tasting is really the curing process.
Okay.
So, oftentimes it's a very salty mixture, or just depending on the way they cure it, is really going to change the flavor of the olive. So the olive kind of plays the backseat role to the curing process when you taste an olive that's been cured. With
okay.
olive oil, what we're doing is we're simply pulling the oil out of the olive, and we're putting it in a bottle for you. And it's not like wine. It doesn't need to be aged. It doesn't need to be cured. It doesn't need to be fermented. If you can put your head right under the press, that's when the olive oil is the best. And so, the flavor is a totally different experience than, biting into a cured olive.
Right. Yeah, because ever since I was a kid, I just never really cared for olives. But then when it comes to cooking, everything I use seems like it has olive oil in it. I mean, you put olive oil in the pan, you put it on the bread, and I've gotten addicted to olive oil everywhere I go. I got to have it, but it's just weird how the tastes are completely different. So explain to me, because I'm pretty stupid about this stuff, how do you take an olive, you see, put it in a press, how do you take an olive and go from olive to the actual oil?
That's one of the most common questions we get is just, you know, people with a curiosity to learn about the process and, you know, what the different terms mean. There's a lot of kind of confusion surrounding olive oil, so hopefully I can clear some of that up.
All
but
right.
To start, I'll actually start with the way it used to be made and kind of where, you know, some of these terms originated from. So, you know, historically, olive oil was made by crushing the olives with a rather large circular rock, and they would use animals or multiple men to push the rock around, you know, a pit that they would fill with the olives, and the pulverized mixture of the olives would then be literally squeezed, and what they would do is they would feed it into some type of, or shovel it into some type of bag, whether it's burlap or some other material. They would kind of fill these bags and stack them up, and then they would squeeze these bags. You know, not so long ago they were using hydraulics, but before that they would use leverage. So they would have like a big, you know, stick hanging off the end of this thing, and they'd be hanging rocks on the end to apply pressure, and that oil would kind of seep through the bag. And what they did was they considered the oil that came out on that kind of first squeezing to be the first press. And then they would go back, they would mix up the bags, and they would press again, and they would consider that a second pressing. However, if you tasted either of those olive oils, the first or the second pressing, it really wouldn't compare with, you know, the olive oil that you get today. Though those terms of pressings kind of stay around, today what happens is the olives are actually crushed in a similar way, but it's done in what's called I should say most commonly a hammer mill. So they're almost simulating the way that an olive would be crushed, except for it's done in an enclosed crusher. And
so this way you don't have bits of rocks in it like they did in the olden days.
Yeah, and we don't get camel fur in the olives either. So that helps. So it's all done enclosed. And then it's, you know, we have a malaxing process, which is actually just a churning of the olive puree, as it were. And that's kind of where maybe some of the art in olive oil comes in, is depending on the type of olive, the time of year, and, you know, the olive miller's judgment, he's going to decide how long the, you know, puree is going to be churned. And that's until it gets to the next step, which is, and I'm probably losing everybody here because it's a long process.
It's interesting because, you know, most people don't know. I've been in the food processing business myself for, gosh, close to 30 years, and I've been in different plants and operations from, you know, food processing and meat and poultry to pickles to peanut butter. And it's always interesting because people don't really think about when they buy that sunshine in a bottle, they're looking at it and don't really realize what process it goes through to get to the store.
Sure. So the final step, you know, and there's a few other little steps in between and after, but the final step is obviously we'll want to separate the oil from everything else. And so today it's done in a centrifuge. So basically we spin that olive puree after malaxation.
Right.
And depending on, you know, the weight of the product, most people or a lot of people don't realize that oil is actually significantly lighter than water. And for that reason, when you spin it, it'll separate out into a different area than the water, and the solids will go, you know, furthest to the outside. And then we're able to just gently pull that oil off, and that's how you really want it. That's going to be the cleanest, and if you can get it right after that process, that's when the olive oil is going to be the best.
Now, explain to me when people say extra virgin olive oil. Y'all hear EVOO, and everybody talks about that. What does the extra virgin part come from?
Gotcha. You know what? This is probably the most common question, and probably the most confusing area of olive oil. Even a lot of people that think they understand, you know, what it is, are usually a little off the mark. And, you know, I don't blame them, because if I ask somebody what does extra virgin mean, generally they'll say, oh, that's the first press, or that means it's cold pressed, or the first cold press. Those are probably the most common answers. But what does that really mean to anybody that, you know, doesn't really know the process, that it was first cold press? Why is that a benefit to you? And the truth of the matter is that though those items are true about extra virgin olive oil, they don't really have anything to do with the meaning of extra virgin olive oil. So let me see if I can clear this up a little bit.
Okay.
Virgin, it's a little intuitive once you kind of understand. Virgin simply means, I talked about that process we just went through. Virgin
right.
simply means that the olive oil was edible at the end of the process. So
okay.
you go through this process of crushing and malaxation and separation. If the olive oil is edible at the end, you have virgin olive oil.
Okay.
Now, I said it was edible, but I didn't necessarily say it was delicious. It just means it was edible. So they came up with the extra virgin category, and its meaning, the true meaning of extra virgin olive oil, its purpose, is to indicate that the olive oil was delicious right out of the press. And what that really means for you is it's going to retain all the flavor and health benefits that were originally in that olive when it was on the tree.
Okay.
So it's actually much simpler than people make it out to be. And I think it's on purpose, because most people are surprised to find out that well over 90% of the olive oil sold in the United States isn't even close to extra virgin. And what that really means is that it wasn't even edible when it came out of the press. And some people kind of raise an eyebrow to them. They say, well, if it's not edible, you know, how are they selling it? Well, it goes through a process just like any other oil, and including corn oil, soybean oil, peanut oil. They all have to be refined, and
right.
that's just kind of a fancy word for cooking at extreme temperatures in a vacuum. They often use chemicals, and they could filter through clay, and you know, the process is not pretty. And if you ever walked into a vegetable oil refinery, you know, the smell alone would probably stop you from buying some of those refined olive oils. But this is what's generally being sold in the grocery store, and you'll know it as pure olive oil.
Right.
Or you'll know it as extra light olive oil. And unfortunately, you know, it's cheap. And so a lot of people that, you know, walk into the store with the idea that they're going to buy olive oil are tempted by the words pure and extra light without really understanding that the product they're buying was inedible at one time.
Huh. So the actual virgin part of it is just meaning it's edible. It's kind of like my food. It's edible, but doesn't mean it's good. And then
exactly.
And then when you go through the extra process, you're making it more tasty, I guess, is the best way to explain it. So pure olive oil could taste nasty, even though it's pure.
Well,
not
you know,
nasty,
the
not nasty, but you know what I mean.
It'll really be more of an absence of flavor, because that's what the refining process does is, you know, if you taste vegetable oil, you're not tasting anything. It's just really the consistency. So in the refining process, you remove all the color, odor, and flavor from the oil. And that through that process, you make it edible again. And just to clarify, there is no process difference between virgin and extra virgin olive oil. There's no extra step. You know, a lot of people think that you have to do something different. It's really about, you know, pulling that oil out and, you know, predominantly tasting the oil. But then, you know, there are, you know, a list of standards that we need to comply with that, you know, I won't bore everybody with, but the most common is free fatty acids. So
right.
that's kind of that make or break between virgin and extra virgin is, you know, 0.8 free fatty acid by the international standards.
Now, hydrogenized, that has nothing to do with your process, right?
Certainly not. You know, when you start talking about hydrogenating oil, that's where trans fats were invented. And it was really just a way to, you know, turn oil into fake butter. But, yeah, certainly not. Olive oil is a unique product in that, you know, if you go into the grocery store, it's likely going to be the only oil you find that is fresh, that is literally pulled out of a fruit and just given to you, and nothing in between. Every other oil on most grocery store shelves has been refined, you know, cooked
right.
at extreme temperatures. There are a few other oils that exist, like avocado oil, but in my opinion, there's no flavor or, you know, health benefit comparison when it comes to olive oil.
So if I'm just sitting here thinking of questions and trying to understand the process, can you give like an idea of if I had, like, let's say a quart of extra virgin olive oil, how many olives or how many olive trees does it take to make that one quart of olive oil?
Yeah, you know, the answer to that question is it depends, of course.
Right.
You know, it's going to depend on the variety of olive. And, you know, I like to jump into that for a second because another thing that, you know, most people don't realize is that there are literally dozens or 100 different flavors based on the variety of olive. And it's just like wines. You know, a Cabernet wine comes from a Cabernet grape. And we've
right.
got the same things going on with olives and olive oil. Seviano olive, Mission, Manzanillo, Ascolano, Arbosana, Arbequina. You could go on for a long time naming varieties of olives. And each one is going to give you a distinct flavor profile. And olive oil doesn't have, you know, one single flavor. And extra virgin olive oil certainly doesn't. You can have light, buttery, sweet extra virgin olive oils, all the way up to, you know, hearty, robust, peppery, pungent, bitter olive oils. And then, you know, a million gradations in between. So, you know, one of my things that I hate to hear is somebody will say, oh, I tried extra virgin olive oil, it was too strong for me, or something to that degree, because, you know, you've just picked one and then, you know, kind of blanketed the spectrum of olive oil based on that one variety there.
Right.
But to get back to your question about quantities, each variety is going to, you know, result in different quantities of olive oil and the time of year that you pick and press them. But just to give you an idea, you know, my brain's all in tons and gallons. So, you know, from a ton of olives, which is 2,000 pounds,
right.
you know, we get anywhere, I would say, from, you know, on the low end, you could get 15 gallons. And on
okay.
the high end, you know, you can break 40 gallons from 2,000 pounds of olives. And, you know, olive oil is about 7.6 pounds per gallon, so you'd have to do a little math there.
Right.
But on the low end, let's just say it was, you know, you got, you know, 100 pounds from 2,000 pounds of olives. So you can kind of see that it's a small ratio of olive oil that you pull out of quite a bit of olives.
Now, do you have your own olive farms there in you're in Northern California?
Yeah, we're in Modesto. We have a small orchard here in Modesto that we make our estate pressing from. And so those olives are grown right on the property that we bought in 1925. That's where we've made the olive oil since 1936. We've got our own mill there. In fact, we have two separate lines. And that's a very small orchard. Most of the olives are grown, you know, much farther north, you know, Corning, Oroville. That's kind of
right.
olive country up there. So that's where most of the olives come from. But, you know, there's olives grown all over the state, you know, as far south as San Diego.
Yeah, actually, I mean, I'm in San Diego, and I've actually seen olive orchards here. And I guess based on region, just like wine, depending on where they're grown, they have different tastes and different ways of
Absolutely. You know, I personally don't believe it's quite as a, you know, at least not yet. Maybe as the industry grows, people get a little bit more, you know, intricate about where the olives are grown. I don't think it's quite as strong of a difference as it is with wine, but definitely there are differences that you can pick up in the flavor depending on where the olives were grown.
How long does it take for an olive tree to go from seedling to when you can actually harvest and the olives to make the olive oil?
Yeah, the rule of thumb, you know, used to be 7 years, and before you kind of could start getting some olives. I'm not sure. We haven't, you know, dove in much into what's called super high density planting, which is kind of the second coming of the California olive oil industry, is being, you know, pushed by super high density olive plantings. and is a primary reason why you're getting a lot more buzz about California olive oil, because there's so many new olive oil companies kind of popping up in California. But, you know, the traditional olive trees, we're talking about 7 years, but, you know, a lot of our olive oils come from trees that are well over 100 years old. And the beauty of the olive tree is that it literally, I mean, could live forever. I mean, there's trees that are, you know, being harvested that are thousands of years old. And my grandfather used to say that longevity, you know, translates into us when we use the olive oil.
Well, maybe it does. Now, do you have any idea where that statement just popped in my head about an olive branch? When you give someone an olive branch, is there a reason why people use that term for, you know, extending an olive branch to someone?
Well, sure. You know, I think that the kind of earliest indication of that was Noah and what he did, you know, he was determining if there was land after the flood. He was releasing a dove, and the dove came back with an olive branch in the Bible, and that's what indicated that, you know, there was land. And so I think that that's kind of, you know, the origin of the extending an olive branch, as, you know, it became a symbol of peace.
Right. Which is kind of interesting to think that after the whole world was flooded out, the olive tree was the first thing that the dove found. So,
right. They knew it then, you know. And
Noah jumped off the ark and started making olive oil.
Exactly. I feel like we're just figuring out what people knew thousands of years ago. You know, my family has always believed in it, but you know, we're trying to, you know, bring in new members into our family of customers that understand the health benefits and the flavor benefits of olive oil. I meet a lot of people that, you know, kind of know of one or the other, or, you know, really believe in one or the other. They've been told by their doctor that it's healthy for them.
Right.
But they're buying the cheapest stuff they can find. And in actuality, they're not getting the full benefit of the olive oil if you're not getting fresh, extra virgin olive oil. And it really is one thing that the California industry can offer, you know, over the imported industry, is generally you're getting much, much fresher olive oil when you buy a California olive oil versus an imported olive oil.
So I know people can go to your website, www.sunshineinabottle.com, and buy the olive oil, and everything you make is the extra virgin olive oil there, and that you sell on your site?
Yeah, that's all we do, and I'll just say you're welcome for the sunshineinabottle.com, because you would have never figured out how to spell Shabika just by the – we were doing Shabika.com for a while, but, you know, I'd spell it out five times. Everybody would be grabbing their pen. So Sunshine in a Bottle really does kind of roll off the tongue a little bit better, and people do understand how to spell it. I want to reiterate, everything's extra virgin. We do something a little different than a lot of our competitors do in what we call our fresh flavored olive oils. And, you know, I talked about the process of the olives, you know, getting crushed and malaxed and separated. And,
right,
for instance, our lemon olive oil, we make it the same way. So what we do is, right before the crusher, we're literally dumping big, beautiful, fresh lemons in with the olives. They get crushed together, they get malaxed together, and then they go through the separation process. And in the bottle, what you end up with is 100% extra virgin olive oil and lemon oil, the oil from the lemon. And it's just such a beautiful combination when you do it that way. You know, a lot of the flavored olive oils you'll see on the shelf have been infused. So if you see rosemary floating in the bottle or garlic at the bottom in the bottle, that means that they probably took low-quality olive oil, because it's not going to matter if it was high quality, because they're going to heat it up so that the oil absorbs the flavor. And then they have to use preservatives so that it doesn't spoil. Our fresh cold process is 100% shelf stable. There are no preservatives. And, of course, that wouldn't mean anything if the flavor difference wasn't like night and day. And it truly is. And we're doing eight of them now: lemon, orange, jalapeno, which is my favorite. You got to like a little heat, but it's not going to light you on fire. I call it a warming sensation. And then basil, which is like pesto in a bottle that you put over pasta. You don't need any pasta sauce. And then, of course, we do garlic. You put that on just about everything. I know people, other people love garlic so much they'll put it on ice cream. And then rosemary, lime, and for the really hot lovers, we do make a habanero olive oil now. I'm not going to lie to you, that stuff's hot. But it's not like Dave's Insanity sauce or anything. It's got a nice heat to it if you like hot foods. And actually, we do a ninth now that does interest people a little bit, lavender olive oil. Yeah, it is 100% edible, but we're pitching it as a skin moisturizer.
Okay.
And it comes in a nice, convenient little pump bottle. My grandfather always said he wouldn't put anything on his skin that he couldn't eat.
Well, that's interesting. Well, if anybody who's listening, if you want to check out their products that he just mentioned, which all of them sound excellent, go to www.sunshineinabottle.com, and you can find all these different products there to purchase yourself some extra virgin olive oil from Shabika. I said it right. And we really appreciate, Jonathan, you coming on the show and kind of give us a little rundown education about the olive oil world and the business. And we appreciate taking, I'm sure you're busy out there. Something I do have to ask you, is there a season that you make the olive oil? That's one question I didn't ask before you go.
Yeah, absolutely. The olives, have one crop per year, and we're going to start. It changes every year by a few weeks, but probably mid to late October is when we'll start pressing olives.
Okay.
And the heaviest, I would say portion of the season for California would be October and November, but you can absolutely press olives in December, January, February. And that's where you're going to get a huge flavor difference, actually, from the same variety of olives. So we actually do a Mission olive pressed in the spring, and the olives have had a chance to ripen on the tree. So instead of kind of smaller green olives, we're talking about really big black olives that are, I say, bursting with oil. And the oil from those olives is delicate and buttery sweet. You can literally put it over popcorn instead of butter. And and so we do offer this array. If you get it, when you get on our website or if you're looking at other people's olive oils, it's a good indication of whether they know what they're selling is if they're listing the harvest time. So whether it's a fall pressing, some people say early or late harvest, but we do fall. We talk about a winter pressing and a spring pressing. Currently, we're offering fall and spring olive oils on our website. So get a fall pressing if, salads, bread dipping, marinades, spring pressing for, baking or, as a butter substitution.
Great. Well, thank you very much for coming on. Everybody who's listening, make sure you click. The link is right on our website here with the radio show to www.sunshineinabottle.com. And Jonathan, thank you very much for coming on this morning and giving us details about the olive oil business.
Hey, I appreciate you having me on. Hopefully I did more good than damage. I hope I didn't confuse everybody. I know it can be very confusing, but, we're also always available. I got a contact form on our website. So anybody who has any questions, that contact form goes directly to me, and I'll answer each question individually. So for you and all of your listeners, if you ever have a question regarding olive oil, I'm happy to answer it.
Great. Thank you very much. I feel more educated today about olive oil, so I hope everybody else who's listening is too. And thank you again, and keep us posted if you come out with any new flavors or any new things in your business.
You got it. Go ahead and plug your email address into our newsletter form on the left there, and you'll get everything right from the horse's mouth.
All right. You take care, and thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
And that was Jonathan Shabika. And check out their website. Check out their different olive oils. And I think you will be pleased with their product. And we're going to take a short break. I'm still having some technical difficulties over here this week. It seems like every week we have the show, we tend to have problems with the system. But I'm going to try to fix that when we go to break here. We'll be coming back with an executive chef Those of you may know him from Facebook, and I'm going to destroy his last name too, so I'll wait and let eyes. And we're having technical difficulties for the third week in a row, but I wanted to make sure we still had you on the show, and hopefully we haven't lost all the listeners. I don't know if you could hear music or anything. We completely went dead, but we are back, and we're going to go ahead and on with the show and with the interview, and we'll have to patch in and fix everything when we go back to editing later. But welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So pronounce your last name, Jeff, because I know I will destroy it.
Tui.
Tui, okay.
Just the way it's spelled. Kind of.
I was going to say Tui, but I thought, well, I better ask first. It looked like Tui.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
Yes, thank you for being on the show. We appreciate you taking time to be on, and I understand that you actually were just, I don't know if you heard the interview before, we had Jonathan Shabika on from Sunshine in a Bottle and talking about olive oil, and I understand you yourself are part of the California Olive Oil Board, correct?
Yes, well, it's called the California Olive Oil Council, and
okay.
I don't know if your previous guest at Shabika, if you asked him about that, if he's a member or not, but it's been around since 1992, and the whole mission of the California Olive Oil Council is it's dedicated to promoting fresh quality extra virgin olive oils made in California, and there is a SEAL certification program that really is designed to help everyone be insured that any product on the shelf that is calling itself extra virgin olive oil is certified by a panel of tasters, and they get the certification, and it's basically a quality stamp that says this oil meets the standards that are held high for extra virgin olive oil. And believe it or not, there is no certification process at the moment in the U.S. So the USDA nor the FDA requires they don't have any labeling laws for it. So there's a huge problem out there where lots of cheap oils, imposters, rancid oils, bad oils can call themselves extra virgin and be sold at a grocery store near you. So it's a really interesting time for the industry, and there's a lot of work being done by the COOC, the California Olive Oil Council, as well as UC Davis Olive Center. And we're really pushing for high labeling standards to come through. And, you know, the USDA, I believe, would be quick to adopt the International Olive Oil Council, the IOC standards, but we believe that the California standards are actually higher because part of the problem with the products that are out there, they contain an IOC certification, and yet, you know, there was a couple studies in the last year that were very, very controversial, but very good studies that were done through UC Davis through a panel of tasters, which I was a member of that certification panel for 2 years, and laboratory testings both at UC Davis as well as independently done in Australia with their panels found that 69% of random sample olive oils pulled from supermarket shelves that were blind taste tested were determined to be rancid or defective. Defective, should I say, is a better word. Rancidity is one defect that would prevent an oil from actually being extra virgin. And then, you know, the industry and the world powers, you know, raised a big fit and tried to discredit the study, and so they did it again. And this time they used a panel in laboratories over in Germany and came back that 74% were found to be defective. So, yeah, wow is a good expression. I think a lot of people would have that same reaction if they you know, knew that. So there's a lot of things that there's a lot of education out there to be done for it. The COOC is an excellent source for educating. There's a website, COOC.com, and you can find all kinds of good, cool information about olive oil there, as well as, you know, some of the and links to all these producers that are certified. And then myself, I'm a chef, and it's kind of a personal mission for me to help increase awareness for extra virgin olive oil, particularly California. So being that California produces, I think, less than 1% of the total production in the world. So,
well, it's amazing. I mean, it seems like just from, you know, just from a consumer standpoint, it's like it's a no-brainer. If you're finding that kind of results in the market with 60 to 73% being rancid, what's the holdup for them to make the changes and accept the standards?
Right.
It's like, duh.
Yes. So there's a lot, you know, it seems like things move ever so slowly when, you know, you have big governmental agencies regulating or not regulating things, and to get something like this passed obviously is huge, and we would rather have it certainly done at a high level rather than just a knee-jerk reaction to this and have them require all of a sudden they send out some regulation that actually does more damage than help. So, and then it takes forever to get that changed, and so hopefully, you know, the time that it's taken is for good reason, and we'll all be in a better place when things happen. So a lot of work to be done there, but that's just one part of the fun food world.
Well, I noticing too, you're involved in the COOC, but you also publish a blog that I was looking at the other day, and being a chef, you know, looking at some of the food and things that you're posting. And that, by the way, those that are listening, you can see the link to Michael's blog here. Instead of me reading out, you can click it on, but it's michaeltuohy.typepad.com/frontburner. And very interesting write-ups in there and interesting details about the food industry. How long have you been running the blog?
About 3 years. Actually, no, going on 4 now. And yeah, it started out when I was living in Atlanta. I was a chef owner of a restaurant there called Woodfire Grill, which is still there, run by my former sous chef and a couple partners. And blogs were just, you know, becoming more and more popular, and I thought, gosh, you know, and a few chefs around the country were doing it, and I thought, you know, we do have opinions. Especially when it comes to our food, and we want to be able to share that with our, not only our customers that come into the restaurant every day, but, you know, we believe, why not give everybody access to that, and keep it as a resource. I wanted it, you know, which is I think what it is. I wanted it to be a resource rather than some big commercial thing with lots of pop-up ads or any of that. You won't see any ads on my blog, as a matter of fact, and that's by design. I still get quite a few requests for people, hey, you know, put this on, blah, 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 but it doesn't quite fit what the blog is about. And the blog for me is really an expression of how I view food and, you know, things that are important related to food. And so I try to link a lot of good resources on there, not only, you know, books I'm reading or books that I've have one of my hobbies is collecting cookbooks and have lots and lots, but it's part of my library. But I also link to sources that I believe are great sources of product locally and globally, and you know, ones that fit into organics and sustainability, and you know, they're artisanal and healthy and all kinds of fun things and wineries.
I liked about the blog, I was going through it yesterday, and it's almost like a research area where you've gotten so many links that go to different information about different foods and different products. And what I like about it, too, is, like you said, there's no advertising, so you don't have to have any bias in there. And it's basically an educational type blog. If you want to know more about certain things, there's so many different links you can click on to go find out more. So it's very well done.
Well, thank you. That was my goal, so I guess I achieved that.
Yes, you did, because so many blogs tend to be biased and lean certain ways based on who their advertisers are, et cetera, and yours is sort of like, keep the facts, ma'am, just the facts.
Exactly. And
it's very fun and enlightening at the same time. Now, so you're still an actual executive chef at a restaurant in Northern California, is that right?
Not at a restaurant at the moment. So most recently I was at Grange Restaurant in Sacramento. I launched that at the Citizen Hotel. They're a historic landmark building, and we launched that in 2008. And I left mid-2011 last year and joined up with a retail store over here, a high-profile one called Dean and DeLuca. And I've recently left them. I'm pursuing a few other projects at the moment and doing a little cooking here in the Valley. I'm working with a gentleman that's got a great little company called Winery Chefs, where we provide culinary services to wineries that don't have culinary programs or chefs on staff. You know, there some of the bigger wineries do, and many of them don't, and a lot of the little ones, you know, they just can't afford to have a full-time chef. So, but they have a need for developing food and wine programs for their clients, as well as you know, foods pairings that go with their wines, and so. That's, you know, a nice little service that we provide in a nice niche. So, yeah, as a matter of fact, I'll be helping cooking a little meal tomorrow morning up at ZD Winery up on the Silverado Trail. So, you know, these are things that are private events typically that are conducted by the wineries. So that's a lot of fun. You get to see different things and work with different people and cook a variety of different foods and match them with wines.
Sounds interesting. Now, how much your background, how many years experience have you been a chef?
Boy, that's scary. I started cooking in a restaurant when I was 16, and so I'm going to say about 34 years, so if you can do the math. and it's a little while, so yeah. But I'm from Northern California, San Francisco native, born and raised. So I was, you know, very exposed early on to what was happening in food. You know, not only just in the Bay Area, but you know, everywhere. A lot of it started there in the Bay Area, the kind of food movement as we know it today. Organic growing was you know, happening around the Bay Area then, and you know, there was a handful of chefs that were making a lot of noise with, you know, doing some new and different things. You know, people like Alice Waters and Mark Miller and Jeremiah Tower and Joyce Goldstein, who I worked with many years ago in the 80s in San Francisco. And, you know, it was an exciting time to see. And, you know, I feel very fortunate to have grown up around that and to be a part of it and witness it. And then, you know, I got this wild hair to move to Atlanta and open a restaurant there for some people, and I thought, well, you know, I'll be back in a year or so, and 20 years later, finally made it back here, so.
So you got stuck in Hotlanta, huh?
Oh, my God, yeah. That's, you know, it's a wonderful place. I mean, there's super nice people there, and it's really a lot of fun. I mean, I was instrumental in starting a good local food network there. I was served on the board of Georgia Organics, some years ago. I helped start a farmer's market there, you know, just really sort carried the California ethos to Atlanta, and then there, you know, was able to find and cultivate growers that would grow for the restaurants, and that was really exciting, and some wonderful people there, some wonderful memories, but a little too hot and humid for me.
Yeah, I would say Atlanta, Georgia, it's a nice place to visit, but I don't think I'd want to live there, especially 20 years. Of course, I'm an East Coast boy myself. I came from Virginia and to California. I came kicking and screaming here, and now I'm not sure how I feel about going back. You can't beat the weather in California.
I know. I'm sitting here right now in the Carneros in Napa Valley looking out my windows, and the grapevines are barely moving, you know, with the breeze, and it's clear and beautiful, and, you know, it's
it does have its benefits, right?
Yes, it does.
So with this, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, and there's a great farmer's market just down the road. You know, Saturday mornings here in Napa, we have the Napa Farmer's Market. It's small by comparison to the one that I come to love in Sacramento, which is just incredible, one of the best I've ever seen anywhere. And you know, it's even smaller than the Davis Market, but the quality is really good. And there's some really good growers there. And then I've been really pleased with Gleason Ranch. There's a table there from Gleason Ranch that they farm apparently over in Bodega, but they pasture, you know, beef, chicken, rabbits, pork, and their meats are just stunning, amazing. As a matter of fact, last week I bought rabbit and chicken. I'm wanting to hurry over there, so hopefully I can get some more. That's pretty
all right,
pretty
well,
good
okay,
stuff.
Chef, now that you mentioned rabbit, what's the best way to cook rabbit?
very carefully. So, what I did last week, I'll just give you a quick rundown. I bought a whole rabbit, broke it down, just so, you know, the way you would a chicken. And
right.
Took off the legs and the shoulders. And what I ended up doing was braising the legs and shoulders. Gave them a nice little rub, and then seared them off, and then hit it with a little bit of actually a little chicken stock and a few aromatics and a little bit of tomato, and just slow cooked it. And so that was super tender, and served that over some polenta with some Swiss chard. And then the saddle, I separated the saddle on the rack and played with it a little bit. I'll have to upload a picture to you. Frenched the little rib bones and everything. I was just playing around having fun because I'm not in a restaurant, so I've got this time on my hands now. And wrapped those in bacon and wrapped the saddle in bacon and then just pan roasted those. And that was a real treat. Served that with some baby collards and some spring onions and peas, and it was a nice little dish. A little aged balsamic for a sauce, and pretty good.
Well, it's everybody.
Made a little stock too out of the bones. That's right. I had some trimmings and made a little rabbit stock, and so I used that to kind of do some pan juices with the braised greens and onions.
That's one of the items I've had that is so delicious, but people just have this thing about eating rabbit. I guess they think of the Easter bunny and little cute little bunnies, and they have a hard time eating it. But it's one of the best. I call it a game animal. Of course, now they're actually grown domestically, but
yeah.
it's a great product.
I need to find out more what kind of rabbits she is raising, because it was super meaty. I mean, it was absolutely delicious. And wrapping it with bacon or in the slow cook braised method keeps them really moist and juicy and just tender and fantastic. But it's funny, I see in the vineyards out here, I see jackrabbits running all the time in our front yard, and I'm always thinking, that's looking about the right size, but so
the jackrabbits are a little thin, though. They might be a little tough and lots of bones, I would think.
Yeah, really long feet and long ears.
Yeah.
Funny, but they're fast, too. They scamper through the vines pretty fast. So,
So your project that you're working on with the wineries and working on that, where do you have a goal you're shooting for with that project?
I'm going to refrain from publicly staying in this forum, no offense, but there's a few
no
things
problem.
That I can't yet divulge, so we'll keep it at that. But of course, yes, to answer your question.
Well, right now we'll just say, shh, be very, very quiet. We're hunting rabbits.
Right.
Well, those that are listening, make sure you check out Chef Tui's blog. There's a link here to our website to his blog. Very interesting, educational, very well done. And also check out Chef Tui on Facebook. And it's just under Michael Tui on your Facebook page, right?
Right. And there's probably a link to your page, so you can find me there.
Yes.
And Twitter and all that fun stuff. So, plenty of info out there. And if anybody's up in the valley, look me up. And I'm happy to share pointers and places to go. And, for food, there's amazing restaurants in this part of the world. And, some just beautiful scenery and great farmers markets. And, we're not too far. The farmers market that I was talking about is right next door to the Oxbow Market, which is open every day in downtown Napa. So right there by the river. And it's really, really nice part of the world. So.
Well, great. We do thank you for coming on and sharing information about projects you're working on. Also, the information about the COOC, that's very interesting. It's almost like you think that would be easy to get going, but I guess politics has a big play in that too. But keep up the hard work and good work, and keep us posted as your secrets can be divulged about what you're doing in the winery project, and stay in touch.
Thank you so much. Take care.
All right. Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Chef Michael Tui, and we appreciate him coming on to our show this morning. We're still having a little bit of technical difficulties, as usual. Seems like it'd be a Saturday morning routine here. And I'm going to check and see if I've got my next guest on here, because I found that when I switch over to music, we're having some issues. So Everybody hang tight here for a second, and if this thing is working correctly, we might have our guest, Andre Carr. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Can you believe it, Andre? You're actually on the radio. Was this like the third or fourth time we tried to get you on the show?
Well, three's the charm.
Definitely. I'm still having technical difficulties. I don't know what the deal is with Blog Talk Radio or it's my computer, but thank you for hanging in there and trying to be on our show so many times. And just, I have to say, welcome. And I guess it must be meant to be today.
Well, I mean, it's exciting because, you know, you get a chance to learn patience. And, you know, when you're walking by faith, patience is the number one thing, because things don't happen when you want them to happen. Things don't happen overnight, but things have a way of happening just in time, and that's what this interview is. Also, I have one of my stars in the play. Her name is Freddie Shante. She's on the line also. I wanted her to participate in the interview. If you want to say hello, Shante.
Yes.
Hi. How are you today?
All right, how are you? Welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on our show this morning. And you guys are calling from Atlanta, right?
No, we're calling from Alabama.
Alabama, I was close.
Okay. We're definitely calling from Sweet Home, Alabama.
Sweet Home. Sweet Home, Alabama, huh? Well, that's not too far from Georgia. Well, what I want to try to do, Andre, is I actually played some of your music last week, but we had the technical difficulties and couldn't get you on. And I'm going to play one of your songs and keep your fingers crossed. And since you're a gospel singer, say a little prayer when I hit these buttons to make sure they work okay. And
what we're going to do
is I'm actually going to leave you on live mic because we're having little issues here. So if you want to mute your phone, you can, or just be very quiet while I play the music, and hopefully everything will work out okay. And then we'll come back and chat a little bit about what you're doing and some of the projects you're working on.
All right, sounds good.
All right, I'm going to play your song. It's Andre Carr, and the song is Help.
Before you, Lord. begging for mercy for my children, Lord. I know that they have strayed away, oh Lord. That's why I'm placing them in your hand. The city is such of a brighter day, but seem like somehow they've lost their way.
I just met her, so she's
okay.
been part of the play, and
okay.
But the next project that I'll be a part of, she will be singing on that. That's for sure, because she is a dynamic singer. But that song is available on iTunes for and CD Baby. So if anybody wanted to, you know, get a hold of that, that's how they can get at it. But we're excited about being with your show. We've heard so much about it. That's why we we're so persistent about being on the show.
Well, they say persistence breaks resistance. So, yeah, thank you for hanging in there. So tell me a little background about you, Andre, as far as how you got into singing gospel music and were you involved in singing in the church early on, or this all come along later in life?
Actually, I was involved in criminal activity. That's really how my life began. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. I was born in Cleveland, Ohio. And, you know, I was the, you know, child, a middle child of three. My mom and dad had a divorce at a very early age. And me not understanding, you know, why my dad wasn't around, I found myself getting in a lot of mischief, being out in the streets and, you know, exploring what other kids were running up and down the streets doing. You know, when only having one parent at home, it's kind of hard for one parent to watch three kids when you have to go to work. So I found out that I had a lot of things that a lot of the other kids didn't have, and that was freedom. So with that freedom, I was able to explore, you know, certain things that was going on in the, you know, I lived in the ghetto. I got no problem saying that. I definitely lived in a ghetto type of area in Cleveland, Ohio. And it just so happened that the OJs had a rehearsal spot. Their studio was like maybe a block away from my house. And, you know, at that time, they were making a lot of money. They were one of the hottest groups in the world. And they had their little Rolls Royces and all the different kind of cars. They were walking around in fur coats and everything. And right away, I knew one day that, you know, I want to do that. I want to be just like them. You know, I want what they have. And, you know, that just stuck in my mind, you know what I'm saying? Seeing the success of them, not knowing that they were involved in drugs and every other thing that was going on.
Right.
Only thing I was looking at was the cover of the book. You know, the overall thing. So,
interrupt you a second. I'll tell you a real quick story about the OJs. I think it was 1977 or 1978. I went to an OJs concert, and the Commodores were the lead-in band. And as you say, you didn't have a problem saying you lived in the ghetto. I have to say, I was just about the only white boy in the audience.
It was one of the
best concerts. It was held in Hampton Coliseum in Norfolk, Virginia area. And when you said OJs, I mean they were hot. They were really hot back in the 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm. They were, and they were my inspiration. You know, not knowing that I would later on become friends with them, and they started letting me come and empty the little trash cans in the studio and and I would wipe off Eddie's car sometimes.
Oh, really?
Or Walt's car. Yeah, and I became friends with them, and they let me in the studio a couple of times, and they would give me $5 sometimes, you know, a little change, whatever, whenever they would allow me to be around things that they really didn't have no business doing. And it was a beautiful thing. It was a beautiful relationship. They recognized me out on the street. They would wave to me, "Hey, Andre," and the kids would be like, "How y'all know them? How you know them?" So that went on for a little while until my mom figured out, you know, that I was down there and didn't have no business. So she kind of put the brakes on that. But I had started singing some of the songs of the OJs, and people started saying, you know, I got talent, and that kind of went to my head. So that led to singing in the talent shows. And then once I started seeing how people was reacting when I was on stage, I kind of got that confidence together. And from that point on, you know, singing was what I was going to do for the rest of my life.
Huh.
So that's basically how the talent gave birth. But little did I know.
How long ago was this when you started actually singing?
I say about maybe about 7 or 8 is when I actually opened up my mouth and started singing. But then once I got to junior high and high school, I was already singing in the talent shows. And after I graduated high school, I was singing in a couple of clubs, and a club called The Spot. Matter of fact, it's on Kinsman. And that's when I met Bobby Harris of the Dazz Band, and he took me under his wing, and I sung with the Dazz Band for about 3 years. And that was amazing because they had just won a Grammy with Let It Whip. And I became very, 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 very a student of being in the studio with them, and that helped me to develop, you know, what to do in the studio, how to write a song, because I was watching Bobby all the time, because Bobby Harris wrote all the songs for the Dazz Band, and that's why the group never really went anywhere, because he was the only one really making any money.
Oh, okay.
So, so after that, you know, developed some bad habits, you know, alcohol and the drugs came in, and that took me on another level of life. And it got real bad, and I couldn't be a part of the group no more because I was, you know, doing that a lot. And, you know, finally I hit my bottom and checked myself into a treatment center and been sober for 21 years now.
Okay.
And, yeah, so that's when I decided, you know, I wanted to give my talent back to God, which gave it to me. So all I do sing now is gospel, and it's been a beautiful ride, you know. Ended up moving down here 10 years ago to Alabama, got married, and came out with my first project. We did very well. I think we sold almost 50,000 units, and the one that I got out now, we're well over that and still selling. So it's been a great opportunity to not only give back, but to let God use me to bring others to Christ, you know, to let somebody see that, you know, he can take someone who was living a certain lifestyle, doing
right.
certain things I ain't have no business doing, and then use that talent to glorify him and to bring others to him and to show others that, you know, it's other things you can do with your talent and with the things you want to do in life instead of just being out on the corner, selling drugs, getting high, acting like a fool, making babies and ain't taking care of them, because I don't have no kids now. But it's just been a beautiful thing the way that he has used me, you know, because we use ourselves when we allow drugs and alcohol to take control of us. So why not let God use us, you know, for
right.
the better of blessing someone else? So along with that, I've met some beautiful people in the industry. I've met the lady that's on the phone now. Her name is Freddie Conte. She's a very beautiful, talented, high-strung actress, singer, a lot of ambitions, and she's going to be an amazing addition to this play. And our next event is coming up. Matter of fact, this Saturday we'll be giving a show in Florence, Alabama. It's about an hour away from where I live, and we'll be bringing in actor, singer, Christopher Williams, better known for his first movie role in New Jack City and his debut album that sold 6 million, I'm Dreaming. So he has a new gospel album coming out, and we're looking forward to putting on this play down here in Florence,
Alabama. What is the play called?
The name of the play is called Saved and Playing Church. It's one of the cover songs off of my last CD. Matter of fact, the first video that was released from this project that I got out now was called Saved and Play in Church. And that song was developed into a video. It heated up on BET and on the Word Network. It had me doing a lot of talk shows like your show, explaining the title of the song and how the song came about, what is the significance behind it. And right after that song fell out, that's when my wife put together the foundation of the play, and she finished the play, and then we started casting for the actors, and we've been out on the road ever since. So that's what we're doing now. The play, Saved and Playing Church, is now a stage play, and we're about to sign a national tour contract with a brother. I don't know if you know him. I know you know Keep Everything in Mace.
Right.
We heard where their managers. We're in the midst of signing a contract with him to put the play on tour, so we're excited about this up and coming news for the advancement of the play as well.
Isn't the video on? Don't you have a video of that on YouTube?
It is. It is.
Yes, I thought I saw that. That's anybody wants to go and find that. It's actually, I believe, under your name, Andre Carr. You can punch in, and then that video comes up. And I watched that, I guess a couple months ago, I think it was, when we first started talking about you coming on the show, and that's an excellent song. What I'm going to do is I'm going to play another one of your songs here, which I really like. I like the actual title
Huff
of it, Huff and Puff,
because
of course what you do is you think of the Big Bad Wolf when you when you say that Huff and Puff. But I'll play that song, and we'll come back, and maybe we can also chat with Freddie a little bit about what she's doing there with you in the play. And so everybody hang tight. And if you can, too, put your phone on mute, because I'm going to have you on live mic so we don't lose you. And the song we're going to play is Andre Carr, and the song is Huff and Puff.
Can be formed against me. Shoot all got the king on the inside, posted like a mailbox on lock. Greater than T, that is in me. The good life was already promised, so reach out and receive. Cause I believe that the best is yet to come. So get ready and get to
the devil can hop and talk, cause he's got no hold on me. The devil can hop and talk, he can lay no hands on me. The devil can hop and talk, he can shoot all the hells in me. It's not that I got Jesus, I know.
Andre Carr, Huff and Puff. And did you write that song, Andre?
I did. I wrote that song in church, during church service. I don't know. I was just inspired. The pastor was talking about something about the devil walking around, talking about who he can devour. And I just got an idea, and I picked up a paper and pencil writing service, and I started writing, and I never looked up again until church service was over. I remember the day I wrote that song. It was a great inspiration to us because it's so true. And, you know, gospel music is about the truth. And it doesn't matter how you serve it up, as long as it's served up raw.
Well, it's all I can see is when I hear that song, I just see the three little pigs running around with the big bad wolf,
wow.
Big bad wolf chasing them around. And that's a great song. I'd say the good thing about not being on our show for a couple of weeks, you got lots of airtime with your song, so people should be familiar with that song. We played it last week, and I had a few people say, yeah, I really like that song. And you said if people want to get your music, they can go to cdbaby.com and just punch in your name. And iTunes,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, just go to iTunes. iTunes, you can get it. Anywhere where there's the digital music out there is pretty much available. iTunes, CD Baby. We do most of our sales at the plays, so that's really been helping out my sales, too, because wherever we get plays, we have our CD sales units on the table for people to buy to take home a souvenir. And we're doing very well in that department, so... we're very excited. And I just definitely want to give a shout-out to my girl, Key Serena. I think she's over in Italy right now. She's the one who really introduced me to you guys and was telling me to come on your show. So I want to give a shout-out to her and her husband and her family, one of my Facebook friends. I know she's out there in Italy. So if she's
all the way out in Italy. She recommended you months and months ago, and we – finally got you on. And yes, thank you, Keith Serena, for having Andre come on the show. And let's put Freddie on for a second. Freddie, you, from what I understand, you're a singer too?
Yes, I'm a singer. I've been singing since I was about 6 years old, so it's been quite a while.
And you're hooking up with this guy in the play now. And are you part of the new music or album that's coming out?
No, I'm not, but I am, going to be singing in the play, and definitely, you know, I'm on board for all of that. I have some projects of my own that, you know, that are in the works. I'm working on my, you know, CD that's going to be coming out in September. It's called Year of the Dream.
Year of the Dream?
Yes.
As a matter of fact, what you have to do is maybe send me some songs from the when you're ready to come out with it, and maybe we can get you on and give you an actual interview yourself.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right.
Awesome.
Well, keep us posted on that, and put Andre back on for a minute because we're actually running out of time here. The clock's going fast today. Andre, I have to ask a question since you're a gospel man, and you know that this is a food show. That we have on every week. So I have to ask the big question. Is there barbecue in heaven?
I want to say that all of our needs will be met when we get there. As far as the menu is concerned, that's not one of my concerns. I just want to get there, you know, because once I'm there, you know, they say that the flowers even praise God in heaven. Yeah, I just want to just get there. I mean, I won't even be thinking about eating, but I'm sure all of our needs will be met.
I tell you, the scary part is I'm sure there's barbecue at the other place because there's always a fire pit burning somewhere. So.
You believe that.
That's what I'm going to say.
You definitely believe it's going to be something there. But as far as for your enjoyment, there's no enjoyment in the other place.
No, we don't want to go there because I think we might be on the rotisserie there ourselves if we go there.
Got that right.
Anyway, well, I appreciate
but
you
I'm so
hanging
excited
in there.
And I appreciate you. Definitely appreciate you having me on your show.
Yes, thank you very much, and keep us posted about your play and as you come out with your new music too. Keep us up to date on that, and we'd love to have you back on. And it was a great interview, finally, right?
Yes, sir. And I just want to give a shout out to everyone that tuned in to listen. Thank you guys so much. Definitely, you can purchase all my music on iTunes and CD Baby, and you'll be hearing great things from us in the future.
Great. All right, Andre, you keep us posted, and it was nice meeting you, Freddie, and let us know when you come out with your music, and good luck with the play.
All right,
thank you so much.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
And there you go. That was Andre Carr. We finally got him on, and we've had the technical difficulties, but yay, persistence breaks resistance. We thank everyone for joining us today, and I think we had three great guests and very educational, interesting, and didn't have my sidekick sticking around here, Mr. Crispy, but I'll find out what happened to him. But everybody, please stay tuned with us every Saturday. Come and see us on Saturday morning from 8:30 to 10, where we talk about food, music, et cetera, et cetera. And since we were talking about, I didn't get a chance to do the contest, and I apologize because of the phones, by the way, but I'll make sure that we do the contest next week. We got to get these things worked out so people can call in. But I want to close out today with, since we were talking about having barbecue in heaven and the other place, I'm going to close out with our favorite song, the barbecue song. Everybody, come back and see us again. Have a nice weekend. And Green Ideas is signing off. Everyone, take care.
Don't know what to do. Take some fancy to me. night, eat some barbecue.